This episode was made possible by a grant from Virginia Humanities. It takes place in Irvington, Virginia, at an outdoor traditional eel pot making workshop in February 2023.
We'll take this off and then we'll start weaving from here and put like two or three lines up and then you'll stop.
I'm Brad Hatch with the Potomac Tribe. Eel pots are a traditional eel trap made out of white oak splits that we've used for generations in our tribe up in Potomac Creek and along the Potomac River. So what we're doing today is basically doing a short workshop to teach people how to weave them. So this specific style of pot doesn't come along until after the Civil War. It's an amalgamation of, you know, English and Indian and African traditions, much like a lot of what, you know, Virginia Indian culture is right now. In the ancient times, there were fish traps that would have been used. Some of them would have been woven, although probably not out of white oak splits. It would have been a different material, maybe reeds or something like that. And they most likely would have been used in conjunction with a weir, which is a trap that's made to direct fish into one area, and the basket would have been placed at the end of that weir to kind of collect all the fish. They would have been much larger than an eel pot, probably. And the eel pots are, the full-size ones are about 21 inches tall and about 8 inches in diameter at the base. Eel pots work on the same kind of concept in that it directs the eel into an area through a funnel. And funnel traps are something that are seen all over the world. It's not just a Virginia Indian thing. I mean, they're used in Europe in ancient times, they're used in Asia, Australia, all over the world. That any place that has fish or eels that you need to catch, a funnel trap is a very common thing because it works. You know, it works really well. So eels are actually a catadromous fish. They're unlike a shad, where a shad will come in to fresh water to spawn and then go back out to the ocean when they, you know, they live their life cycle out in the ocean. An eel lives mostly in fresh water and goes out to the ocean to spawn. They go to the Sargasso Sea. Eel pots, there's examples, historical examples used within Algonquin groups up and down the East Coast of the United States from about Maine all the way down to Virginia. And as of right now, from what I can tell, the only groups that are really making them traditionally to any extent are us, the Potomac, and the Nanticoke have a pretty strong eel pot making tradition. As a matter of fact, eel pot is on their tribal flag, which, I mean, you know, tells you what you need to know right there, how important it was to them. Now they're in Delaware, but originally they come from the eastern shore of Maryland. The pot is constructed of two different parts that are woven on molds. There's like a body, which is the exterior part, and then there's a funnel, which is the part that actually does all the work of the trap. It directs the eel in and catches them. Even though the body is kind of the most iconic part, it's the most visible when you look at it, it's actually the funnel that's the most important thing to get right. Because if your funnel's not right, you won't be able to catch eels in it.
I'm Deborah Wilkinson, and I'm a citizen of the Upper Mattaponi Tribe. The funnel has its complexity as far as versus the shell. It's smaller, it's easier to hold. However, it also slips more. So trying to hold it and keep it from slipping and trying to keep the ribs of the funnel aligned. Very complex, and I'm like, wow, you know, no, just amazed that they used to do these with a lot less modern tools than what we have today. And then it's very
And we're doing half scale pots because it's just a little easier to work with the smaller materials. But I always tell people, if you can make a small one, like a half scale one, a big one is easy to make. They're working on molds now that are sitting on frames. The molds are turned out of poplar, and they have dowels through the center of them. And they sit on a frame, so it allows them to rotate while you're weaving. Traditionally, the molds and the frames would have been actually a bench that you sit on, so you would sit down to weave instead of standing up. When I make a large size traditional pot, it's on a traditional style bench and everything that you sit on.
I'm Reagan Anderson. I am a member of the Potomac Tribe. I am an apprentice with the Virginia Folklife with Brad, and I'm also the tribal preservation intern at the Virginia Department of Historic Resources. Historically, there might be two men in a boat, and they've got about 50 pots that they're putting on a line and then sinking down. Of the big pots, we only really have like a couple that we put out because there are laws against putting them out. There's mesh size laws and everything, but since we're Native American, we can put a couple out as long as we tag them for game wardens or anything. So we only put out about two or three, and you know, we can't make 50. It'd be pretty hard to make that many. So we haven't had any success yet. So hopefully in the future.
So what Deb is doing is she's taking and scraping a split down right now to thin it. It's what I call dressing it. After you get it split down to a certain thickness, then you can take a knife and use your knife essentially like you would a wood plane. So you set your knife flat against the strip, and then you pull your strip through along the knife, and it makes these little shavings, and it shaves the white oak split down, you know, as thin as you need it to be able to weave.
My name is Deb Rantanen, and actually I don't have a tribal affiliation, but I'm here from Jefferson Patterson Park and Museum, and we have many archaeological sites and artifacts from many different tribes across Maryland, actually.
When I designed the workshop, I designed it for members of Virginia Indian tribal communities, but also people who work with tribal communities as educators, and so Deb fits that bill really well. Even though she's in Maryland, they work with the Piscataway a lot, and we actually go up there, have been up there a couple times to do events with them, like an Indigenous Heritage Day and Archaeology Day event, where we sit and make eel pots and nets and stuff like that.
Well, and really, the an important commonality is we're right on the Patuxent River, so the river communities is another commonality.
The last time I was there doing eel pots up at Jefferson Patterson Park, I ran into a guy who was Piscataway, and the Piscataway are another tribe that used to have a pretty strong eel pot tradition. They have an example, at least one example that I know of an eel pot of theirs that's in the Smithsonian. And so I was very excited to run into him while we were making eel pots, and I asked him, I was like, oh, do y'all still make them? And he said that not anymore, that just nobody that uses them anymore, but that they used to eat, that he remembered people making them and using them. So there are several people that remember it, remember them being made and remember them being fished, but there are fewer people that remember how to make them. So within our tribe, when I started doing it, there were two people left that knew how to make them. And only one of those people had learned to make them like from his grandfather. Of the two people, one of them passed away not too long ago. The other guy, who is 82 years old, is the one that learned from his grandfather. And he's a wealth of information. And he's actually a good friend of mine now. And I go try to see him at least once every month to talk, not just about eel pots, but about fishing and everything like that, too. He's a commercial fisherman, still out on the water every day during the season. I mean, that's still his full-time job, which is amazing. I think he's going for the record. Up at home, like the people who were watermen, a lot of them, they fished until they died, and a lot of them died out there on the water. It's hard work, you know, it's a hard life to live like that, but you know, it's a style of living that we've had for a very, very long time, and I think in some ways it calls us, you know, it's something that's kind of in us, and I think there's a desire to be out there and to do things like this. Maybe less so these days because we live in a part of Virginia now that's rapidly growing and it's expensive to live. We're not too far from Fredericksburg. We're very much in the Northern Virginia sprawl these days. So a lot of people that are younger have turned more toward what I would consider like a regular job, you know, working up toward D.C. or in Northern Virginia. There are a few folks left that are watermen full-time. You can count them all on one hand in our community now. But there still are a lot of people that are watermen kind of part-time. So they'll fish crab pots or they'll fish nets every now and then. But it's not like their major source of income. It's just something they do. And it's part of that tradition, you know, that they still are connected to the waters of Potomac Creek and Potomac River in a very real way. You're going to do that.